Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Suzlon Energy Limited Q4 FY24 earnings conference call hosted by ICICI Securities. During this call, the company management may make certain statements which reflect their outlook for the future or which could be construed as forward-looking statements. These statements are based on management's current expectations and are associated with uncertainties and risk as fully detailed in their annual report, which may cause the actual results to differ. Hence, the statements must be reviewed in conjunction with the risk that the company faces. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Mohit Kumar from ICICI Securities. Thank you and over to you, sir.
Thanks, Seema. Good evening. On behalf of ICICI Securities Limited, I would like to welcome you all for the Q4 FY24 and FY24 earnings conference call of Suzlon Energy Limited. From the management, we have with us Mr. J.P. Chalasani, Group CEO, Mr. Himanshu Modi, Group CFO. We'll begin with the opening remarks, followed by a Q&A session. To be fair to others, we request each participant to ask not more than two or three questions. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Mohit. Good evening to each one of you. Thank you for joining us on our Q4 FY24 earnings call. I hope you had an opportunity to review our results and investor presentation. We will now share with you an overview of the industry and we will walk you through our Q4 FY24 and full year performance. We will then take your questions. FY24 has been a remarkable year with standout performance across financial and operational parameters. Largest ever order book of 3.3 gigawatt with a strong pipeline provides Suzlon with a strong revenue visibility. This includes order book of 2.9 gigawatt as on 31st March 24, plus 102 megawatt of order announced in May. This is a well-diversified and healthy order book. Our endeavor will remain to pursue quality orders with a higher value and better margins. Coming to the sector, India's wind installation also saw a quantum jump after years of impasse. Wind installations for India for FY24 broke the ceiling to register 3.3 gigawatts of installations, the highest post FY17. Globally, India ranks fourth in total wind installations with 46 gigawatts of installed onshore wind as of March 24. In this, Suzlon installation registered more than 75% year-on-year growth to 882 megawatts in the year of FY24. In the current scenario, wind plays a crucial role in energy transition as growth of Indian renewable depends upon wind installations. That's because the industry has seen the transition from hybrid to round-the-clock and has moved to firm and dispatchable renewable energy. FDRE tenders, whether it is for the peak or the load-following tenders, is solidifying wind position in India's energy transition. These kinds of tenders require very high share of wind to meet the generation profile. Our OMS business continues to do well with over 14.7 gigawatts capacity in India. On SE4, performance has also been encouraging and continuing to grow. And continued growth of the wind sector will further promote SE4 business as a major revenue comes from supply of wind components. With strong fundamentals and 29 years of strong track record, we firmly believe Suzlon is now well positioned to leverage the market opportunity arising from the energy transition. With this, I now ask Himanshu to take us through the financial performance.
Thank you, JP sir, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I will be using slide number 16 to 23 of our investor presentation, which has now been uploaded on our website www.suzlon.com. As a reference point for my discussion during this presentation. FY24 has seen us register robust improvement in all our key parameters, and our fundamentals have strengthened with a focus on the bottom line. We have made deliveries of 710 megawatts, which is 7% higher as compared to FY23, despite which an EBITDA growth of 24% as compared to last year has been registered, and a PAT before exceptional item has grown by 428% as compared to FY23. All of this is a result of several initiatives that have been taken by the company over the last in the last financial year, which include margin improvements, cost optimization, and lower interest cost as a result of repayment of the entire debt. Similarly, in Q4 FY24 performance, the PAT before exceptional items has seen a staggering YOY growth of 413% from 68 crores in FY23 to 281 crores in FY24. On the P&L account, renewed focus on the bottom line has resulted in a revenue of 6,497 crores with a contribution margin of 36%. EBITDA and PAT before exceptional items have been highest that the company has ever reported in the last seven financial years. Consolidated EBITDA has been reported at 1,029 crores with PAT before exceptional items at 714 crores for FY24. We are pleased to report our balance sheet as of March 24 demonstrates a very strong position of strength with a consolidated net worth of 3,920 crores, whereas the net cash position of the company as of March 24 stands at 1,148 crores. I would like to summarize that the last 1 year for the company has been a year of financial turnaround. I would also like to reiterate that Suzlon has never been in such a strong footing as it is today, with a fortified financial position, an optimized cost structure, largest ever order book with a strong pipeline in discussion, a completely geared up supply chain to meet the order book demand, regaining confidence of all our stakeholders, and a strong management team with a enthusiastic zeal to deliver on all the performance parameters. With that, I'd like to conclude my presentation and we can open the floor for Q&A that the callers may have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Thank you. We take the first question from the line of Sumit Kishore from Axis Capital. Please go ahead, sir.
Good evening and thanks for taking my questions. The first one is, could you spell out the contribution margin in FY24 for WPG and the fixed expenses in the WPG business for FY24?
The contribution margin, Sumit, for FY24 in the WPG division is about 19.5%, whereas the fixed expenses, as we've been saying earlier, is close to about 600 crores. So our break-even point, as we've been advising in all our earlier meetings and calls, remains pretty much unchanged.
19.5% is a brilliant performance. So is this sort of sustainable level or, because we've spoken about maybe 16%, 17% levels earlier?
So, Sumit, there are two or three factors that we need to keep in mind as we enter this financial year. Number one, we are seeing some early hardening of commodity prices like aluminium, copper. There are certain logistical challenges given the routes in Red Sea. So there might be, you know, some slight increases in costs. Also, you know, we are, as we deliver in FY25, we are now moving to a completely S144 model, as you guys are aware. So in for FY25, because even our suppliers have, you know, built up capacity recently, you know, there will be certain cost compulsions, and therefore the COGS will be under pressure for us. Having said that, you know, we of course continue to maintain mid-teens guidance, and the management endeavor would be to deliver an optimized contribution margin. But very difficult to comment whether the 19.5% is sustainable or not. But we should be there and thereabouts in, you know, in the 15 to 20% region.
Got it. Given your net cash at the end of fourth quarter at 11.5 billion rupees, what should we read into the interest expense being higher than the other income?
So the interest expense specifically in Q4, you know, as you know, in late December, we announced a financial working capital tie-up with REC Limited. And as a result of that tie-up, there was a one-time processing fees that was paid to REC in early January. So to the tune of about 11 crores, a one-time processing fee for the working capital tie-up has been booked as expense in this quarter. And of course, in addition to that, a lot of LCs and bank guarantees have been issued to our customers and vendors, which has resulted in increase in the interest costs as compared to Q3.
Got it. Last question. For your ETC order book, could you speak about how many footprints for installing wind turbine would you have in control where land and evacuation are in place, and maybe on similar lines for your non-EPC order book? Thank you.
Yeah, see, our EPC is current, in the current order book, split is one-third and two-third. One-third is EPC and two-third is non-EPC projects. On the EPC portion, evacuation, in the sense the grid connectivity, we don't control because that's in the scope of the clients. As far as the land is concerned, obviously it's a critical area. Even last year, the, one of the reasons why as a country we could still do only 3.5 gigawatts is the land challenges. I'm not going to say it's going to be easy, but with the work what we have done in the last year, we expect that the H1 it will be a little more easy, and then we'll continue to work towards that. And also, as we mentioned earlier, which may not immediately help, but the on the developmental route what we're taking in few other states, which was what we're preparing for towards the end of this year as well as next year, that we want to remove the land issue as far as our EPC projects are concerned. And the non-EPC portion, we keep track of what's happening there on a continuous basis. Land, would let's accept the fact that in the wind sector, land would continue to be a challenge, and it's a question of to be managed from time to time. So with those challenges is what we will deliver.
Thank you, and wish you all the best.
Thank you, sir.
The next question is from the line of Parv Jain from Nivesh I Investment Advisory. Please go ahead, sir.
Hello, sir. Congrats on good set of numbers.
Thank you.
Can you give us a broad idea on expected wind installations for FY25? And what kind of market share can we expect out of that Suzlon would be holding?
It's your guess versus my guess. Our expectation, if you remember in FY24, we have always been saying anywhere between 3.5 to 4 gigawatts. And our expectation for FY25 is it could be anywhere up to 5 gigawatts, between 4.5 to 5 gigawatts. And normally, you know, like our always claim was that market share is different figure than what we expect to do it, but we have been always in the range of 25 to 30% in the market share. If you look at this year, our market share has been 27%. So we would be in the range of market
share. Okay. So, thank you so much.
We move to the next question, please.
Sure, sir. The next question is from the line of Mr. Rohit Kumar from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead, sir. Mr. Rohit, your line is in the talk mode, sir. Please go ahead with your question. Mr. Rohit, your line is in the talk mode, sir. Please go ahead with your question. As there is no response from the current questioner's line, we move on to the next question. The next question is from the line of Subhadeep Mitra from Nuvama. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon, sir, and thank you for the opportunity. So while you have given us a sense of the market share, I just wanted to understand that from an order inflow perspective, assuming that you are maintaining that 25-30% market share, where do you see the market size going? Because our understanding is that there is probably 8 to 10 gigawatt of just pure wind projects, including FDRE, RTC, etc., which would have probably got bidded out in FY24. So hopefully all of those will probably start seeing ordering in the next few months. And then there is also, you know, on top of that, a large C&I market. So if I have to, let's say, look at the overall TAM for, let's say, the next 2 to 3 years, how would you look at it?
Hey, the engine for this business is the orders and the projects, which will actually drive how much we'll achieve. And second thing, as I mentioned in my opening comments, currently because most of the bids are either RTC or FDRE bids, how much wind capacity gets added would decide how much is RE capacity going to get added in the country. That's the first point. Yes, you're right. Even if you look at even the current year, in the first 4 months, there's almost about 12 gigawatts of bids awarded. I think 11.2 gigawatts, 11.8 gigawatts. Everything is RTC or hybrid or FDRE, which has an involvement of our calculation is about more than 8 gigawatts of that would be the wind component. Not about 11 gigawatts, but installed capacity I'm talking about. You can't match the bid capacity with installed capacity because in FDRE is higher. And there is another 5 gigawatts where the bids are submitted and reverse option has to happen. And another the 10 gigawatts is where bids are announced. There is a huge amount of pipeline, 27 gigawatts what we talk today. And C&A market. And as you know that, you know, our share in the C&A market is, even the current order book is more than 50%, 56% or so. Others will not be a constraint. As a country, how much we're going to do each of the year? Because market share for me is a little misleading, because how much are we prepared is what we should do. But market share might be very high if country does smaller capacity. And our market share will be, you know, between 25 and 30 if the country is doing a larger capacity. Expectation this year is that there are figures being talked today in the beginning of the year, anywhere between 5 and 7 gigawatts. Different people are talking different numbers. Even 7 gigawatt number is also out there. But our expectation is that we feel that looking at on-the-ground constraints at the beginning of the year, obviously we will keep reviewing and revising it quarter-to-quarter basis, would be about 5 gigawatts this year. Having said that, now the government has come in, and in fact, the even central government started working towards the land issues and ROW issues to be resolved. Okay. So they're saying that now we will get in, because they're also realizing now unless wind moves, RE will not move. With that, we expect that this 5 gigawatts or 6 gigawatts, whatever it happens this year, would reach about 7 to 8 gigawatts next year, FY26. And we should reasonably assume that 9 to 10 gigawatts is what we should reach a level in FY27. That's our feel.
Understood. So these numbers that you're talking about are in terms of actual execution or installation of capacity, correct?
Commission capacity on the ground.
Additional capacity on the ground, right? So if I were to look at the number that you just said, that by FY27, we may look at a 9 to 10 gigawatt kind of installation on ground, then that means that the ordering for that 9 to 10 gigawatt will probably happen in the current fiscal in FY25, right?
Reasonable to assume that some part of it will also move to next year, but yes.
Understood. And so this 9 to 10 gigawatt number that you're mentioning would be primarily the auction-based capacity, so the C&I piece will be on top of this?
No. I'm talking about our capacity as a country to commission, how much we're going to commission, the irrespective of C&I or the utility PPA based one. I'm talking about as a country how much wind capacity will get added. I'm not bifurcating between the two.
I understand, sir. Perfect, sir. Thank you for answering my question.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Manoj from Virtusa in Consulting Private Limited. Please go ahead, sir.
Good evening, everybody. Congratulations on the good set of numbers.
Thank you.
You know, it's really not good to see the numbers, you know, when you see it from now, 1100 negative to the cash flow of 1100 positive. You know, it really sounds, you know, great in terms of numbers. So I wish all the very best for the team coming here. I just have one question, sir. So currently, if you see the order book, we have around 3.3 gigawatts. So when are we expecting to deliver the 3.3 gigawatts?
See, the currently, as we just now spoke before this, the orders are now becoming a longer term. These 3.3 currently what we have is meant for FY25 and FY26. On paper today, what is happening today, we also need to realize is that when contract gets awarded, they get awarded for a particular year. But then things are moving because the connectivity is getting delayed or something else is getting delayed. The clients are moving the schedule. So therefore, there is a blur in order versus actual schedule in the order versus in reality what is happening. Therefore, that you will also see this order book keep increasing in future. That's what Imanshu said, that, you know, we had a discussion about so many orders. These will be for... Predominantly, currently what we have is for FI25 and FI26. But having said that, some more orders might come for FI25 as well even this year. And orders which will come in again would be for FI26-27. Because this is a constantly moving scenario. And what we are also doing is that looking at this uncertainty of the projects, we are actually saying that, okay, we will build a buffer of 15% to 20% additional order intake for each year compared to our capacity.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. Just wanted to understand
that's the reason why last year we could have done more was purely because the reason was that some of the clients have moved the deliveries from last year to this year because the connectivity is getting delayed or their transmission line which connects from the pooling substation to the things are getting delayed. So therefore, we are seeing this on the ground. I think we're still as a sector, struggling to move up the numbers. While we have a 45% growth moving from 2.2 gigawatts to 3.2 gigawatts in a year, which is a good movement, compared to 25% between FY22 and FY23. From 25% growth rate, we moved to the 45% growth rate. And in fact, we moved from 10% in FY2023 to 75%. We are all moving forward, but I think there is still work in progress.
Okay, I got it, sir. Totally understand. Yeah. Just one more question regarding the challenges, you know, we have in the underground to face. What are the company's vision on it and how are we going to face those challenges in the upcoming years?
Can you just please repeat because there's some...
To interrupt. Mr. Manoj, are you connected on your earphone, sir? I would request you to please switch to your handset.
Okay, is my voice clear now?
Yeah, it's clear.
Okay. So what are the challenges, you know, we have down the line, sir, you know, to understand about how the organization is going to face that in the upcoming years?
See, when you're in business, challenges will always remain. Only thing is what you foresee and what you get prepared. Our biggest challenge was the debt, which we solved in this year. Second biggest challenge was working capital non-availability. So we solved that issue, working capital non-availability now. We never started a year with such of an order book. So we resolved that issue of an order book. Above all, what is important is organization capability to deliver. So last year we spent significant amount of time of centering the organization at the leadership level. So whatever we could do, we had done it. But the challenges on the ground what is going to happen with connectivity, the land and the clients would continue to be there. Those things, as and when come, you need to be prepared as an organization to respond and then see how best you can mitigate on this. But internally, whatever we could envisage, in fact, in FY24 was our year of consolidation, creating a launchpad for the future, that we have done it. But having said that, will we not face challenges? We will continue to face challenges in the external world. And another important thing is that we also ramp up was important for us, 3 megawatt new turbine we launched. So we smoothly ramped up, and you know, turbines are out there, supplied more than 100 megawatts, and their some of the capacities commissioned, they're all operating well. So therefore, that initial, last year at least, we had that new turbine coming, new model coming in ramp up, and how will it behave once it's commissioned, those things are also over for us. Okay.
Thank you, sir. Thank you once again.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ketan Jain from Avendus Spark. Please go ahead, sir.
Good evening, sir. Am I audible?
Yes, sir.
Yes, you're audible.
Yes. Sir, what is your guidance on deliveries in FY25?
Okay, then obviously we cannot provide any guidance, and you know, we have followed that practice earlier and we continue to follow that. As JPC sir said earlier, you know, we believe that in FY25 installations on ground will be around 5 gigawatts and you know, Suzlon market share historically has been what it is, you know, that's for you to see. So, you know, will we be able to continue with our market share, strengthen it, lose it? That is something I think, you know, we leave each individual investor to sort of assume.
Understood.
That's the only guidance we can provide.
Understood. Also, my next question is, what can be the margin difference in EPC orders and non-EPC orders?
So again, we don't provide yet the street aspect of the margin difference between EPC and non-EPC orders. We're only giving for the consolidated WTG division, as I said earlier on the call.
Okay. And any improvement we can expect in O&M margins? And I think currently it was at 40%.
So again, we maintained always that O&M margin will continue around you know, this vicinity, of course, few basis points here and there, but I don't think improvement in O&M margins should be expected. We've always maintained that O&M, you know, for the next few years, I would say 1 or 2 years, would be a secular growth on the top line, because the nature of the business is such that there is a 3-year free O&M period for the installation. So by the time the revenue really takes off, you know, is when sizable fleets only come into billing. It may take another year or two for, you know, the whole history to catch up. So I don't think any margin improvement or significant top-line improvement on O&M should be expected.
My last question is, what is the utilization factor we can expect in the 5 megawatt turbine and all the other lower classes? Like, how different is it?
We don't have a 5 megawatt turbine.
Sorry, the 3 megawatt, sorry.
So the current our order book is significantly for 3 megawatts, and as you given in the investor presentation, 3 megawatt order book is 83% share.
No, I mean in the wind turbine, the TUS, the plant utilization factor.
That would vary from site to site. So okay. Wind is very specific to the site. But basically what we do is that when we offer for the same site, we offer 3 megawatts or 2 megawatts. Obviously, we give the option to them for both. And the cost per kilowatt hour remains the same for both. Because 2 megawatt is cost out is done. As I was explaining earlier, 3 megawatts is being the first year of operations, the cost would be a little higher even for us and for vendors. Whereas 2 megawatt is done for quite some time and, you know, modes got amortized. So with that, the cost per kilowatt hour, I'm not talking about the price of the turbine, cost per kilowatt hour today, 2 megawatts and 3 megawatts are same at a given site.
Understood. Sorry, if I can squeeze in one last question. So is there any challenges in transmission capacity creation in India And if yes, then which area is it?
Challenges would a transmission capacity, not capacity, but coming on time would always remain as an issue, because otherwise today the transmission network planning is significantly improved compared to, let's say, my younger days of 2 to 3 decades back. The amount of planning what they've done on the CTU grids. The challenge is what we're facing is the timeline shifts, you know, like by 3 months or 6 months sometimes. Moving the timeline in terms of when that will be available is what is shifting. And the second challenge what we've seen, which we now given the feedback to MNRE, is that the solar and wind, the solar, you know, the moment the any CTU is announced, it is easy for solar to go and book the capacity. For wind, you know, you always need 1.5 to 2 years of a wind data in a particular place. So therefore, by the time wind potential is established, the CTU capacity is booked for solar. So therefore, how do we solve this issue? So there are two things which are now being discussed, is that the ministry agreed in principle to see that we can create a capacity, a grid capacity in exclusively the wind zones and given reserve for the wind capacity. And second, they are also now looking at the probability of wherever the solar is installed in substations, purely the solar, is there a way that, you know, we can bid out the wind capacity there, because transmission exists there. We don't need to increase the transmission capacity. Just add the wind capacity in the places where the solar is already there, depending upon, you know, land being available there, depending upon the wind potential. But there could be some unlocking of the transmission capacity for wind.
Understood, sir. Thank you. Those are my questions.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to all the participants, if you wish to join the question queue, you may press star and one on your touchtone telephone. The next question is from the line of Ravi Vadaga, an individual investor. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, hi, good evening. I think congratulations on a remarkable year.
Thank you.
The first question is, just want to understand our manufacturing paradigm, right? Say our S144 model for a client A and client B, will they be different? I mean, are these engineered to order, configured to order, made to order? What kind of a paradigm are this? Yeah. And the second question is, I mean, say, what is the path? Now we are at around 270 megawatt, right? 170 was last quarter, 270 now. What is the path to, say, 750? Because that's when our new order intake and your ability to execute, they will start matching. And, I mean, prima facie, the order books looks good because our rate of execution is lower than that, so it will keep on ballooning. So if you can just give a little bit of color in terms of what is in our, what would be the core constraints to move from the present run rate to, say, I'm just putting a 750 megawatt just to have some moisture.
Yeah. On the first point, each model is a specific design and each manufacturer's model is specific design. But thereafter, the turbine remains constant irrespective of which site in India is installing. As long as in India, okay, if this turbine has to be installed somewhere else in a different wind regime, there could be some re-engineering to be done. But for India, if you bought a 3-megawatt model, it is the same 3-megawatt for client A, client B, client C, client B. It won't change. You don't need to do any modifications client-wise. That's question number one. Question number two is that, as I mentioned earlier, the main engine for supply is orders to be there, and second is the project's execution. Because projects is what will give you how much offtake will happen. Supply is not a constraint, okay? Especially now with our working capital and orders are available. How much can we deliver? Is it 750? Is it 500? Is it 300? It all depends upon the readiness of the projects to take. And what we are expecting is that gradually, it won't happen immediately. We expect that in a couple of quarters, that would improve. So it may not happen immediately, but I think the offtake of projects would improve. Orders is not an issue, but offtake of project readiness will improve. And I don't want to put a number to it, but I can only say it will change in the next few quarters to come.
Okay. So, I mean, just a little follow-up on that. The constraint, I mean, good that it will change. The constraints which are in, say, Suzlon's purview, right? I'm assuming manufacturing capacity would not be a constraint. So, but in last quarter call and few in the past, you mentioned the whole EPC capacity could be a constraint. So what is in our purview, which is something which you guys are looking at in terms of improving, so that when, as and when the things happen, we are ready?
Yeah. First of all, if you look at current order book, one-third is EPC and two-third is non-EPC. In case of non-EPC, the project progress we can't completely control. Maybe our scope is only turbine supply and direction, or just the turbine supply and supervision. So we will not have a control on whether their land is available, their foundations are ready, their fabrication system is done, their transmission system is not done. We have no control, except we keep tracking, because that has an impact on our delivery. We can definitely work on EPC where we have the full control. There your point is absolutely valid. And in fact, right now our strategy is that because we are seeing these challenges outside, we should actually try to improve our EPC, move more towards EPC so that we can control the uncontrollables. Even today, obviously, having said that, even we are facing some constraints in terms of EPC because advanced action on the land was not taken in the earlier years because of various reasons what we have done. The difference what we are doing right now, in fact won't come this year fully, maybe in the last quarter and then the next year onwards will come, is we are going for what is called a development contract first with the clients. So a client says that, okay, I want to develop 500 or 700 or 1,000 megawatts in this particular area. He says that, okay, let's finalize all the commercials. I'll issue everything, but I'll give you an NTP for the development. So, and what we have done to help that is that we have gone ahead in places like Rajasthan and AP, and we are now trying to enlarge that other states. We have a rights, exclusive rights to develop wind projects for its geographical area. So in Rajasthan, we have about 2.7, 2.8 gigawatts. In AP, we have more than 3 gigawatts. We have a rights to develop, and once we have the clients who are saying that, okay, I want to set up here, we go ahead and start acquiring the land in advance. And we don't get our working capital get stuck in the land because they are giving it to us. And then for them also, project sunset rate will go away because land is being done earlier. That model is what we are working on, but that model significant impact you will see in FY26 and FY26 onwards, and subsequently in every single year. That's what we are working on right now, and which is very, very important, we feel, because the country's capacity addition, I'm not saying it with arrogance, capacity addition would significantly depend upon how much we do. When you say FY17 was the highest we did last time, after that we did the highest now. FY17 was our highest, and now this year is after that we are the highest again for us. So therefore, when we achieve that, and you know, sector also moves up. So we understand that, and being the leaders, we need to shape that how much wind capacity can get added. So these are some of the steps what we're doing today. But you will see that impact of that maybe in the last quarter, but significantly in FY26 onwards.
I appreciate the intent, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Mr. Mauli, an individual investor. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, good evening, everyone. So that's a couple of questions. So is there any chance to improve the
technical? Not very clear, please. Your voice is not very clear.
Is there any plan to increase the promoter holding at this point?
Promoter holding at any point? Any plans to increase the promoter holding?
So, as company management, we cannot comment on the same. It is something that the promoters and the family has to decide. But as management, we don't really comment on the same.
Okay. So, and just the second question is about the merger plans or whatever it is, right? So, which is in the talks. So, just want to understand, you are also talking about the participating in the PSU bids or it is one of the criteria, right? So are we also planning to participate?
Rahul, we are really struggling to hear you, so you know, I really cannot understand your question.
Manisha, I would request you to please switch to your handset if you are on a speaker, your phone.
No, I'm on a headset, so I'll ask my question again. So,
okay.
So, as part of the merger plan, are you able to hear me now?
Yeah, clear.
So, as part of the merger plan, which is in talks or which is in the proposal at this point, right? So, one point which is mentioned in the proposal is like it is one of the criteria to participate in the PSU bids. So are we also planning to participate going forward as individual bidder, or is it like even for the executor or a vendor, we need to have certain conditions? How is it?
No, this is what we are talking right now is participation in projects, whether it's the supply of the projects for the PSUs, not for as an investor in the projects.
Okay.
Like NTPC develops use capacity. Earlier, we were not getting qualified because of our network issues, and this merger would help. And in fact, even today, some places will get qualified, and we started actually bidding for public sector.
Okay. So just one last question from my side, because in the previous question you have answered that by 27 we might expect around 10 gigawatts of capacity to be commissioned on the ground, right? But we are also talking about having just above 100 gigawatts commissioned by FY30. So is it possible, considering we just have 40 at this point and we are just looking at 10 gigawatts itself only in after 3 years or so. So in the last 3 years, are we going to execute a large number of orders, or how is it at this point? Because it doesn't match up with what we are talking, because we are talking about the 10 gigawatts for quite some years now, year-on-year execution of 10 gigawatts or commissioning of 10 gigawatts. Right? But it has still not happened, and we are still targeting only at... in all the PPTs or what are the data points we are talking, we are still targeting around 100 gigawatts. So how it is planned at this point? If you can provide some details around it, it will be helpful.
At the macro level, Government of India, and then especially CEA, said that to meet the demand of 2030, the least cost option needs 100 gigawatts of wind turbines. So therefore, as a country, we are targeting to reach 100 gigawatts of installed capacity by 2030. That's a target which country is working towards.
Okay, okay. On a reality, do you think it is possible considering the current realities on the ground?
See, the question is, suppose let's say that we reach about 9 to 10 by 27, FY28, FY29, FY30, itself can give you anywhere between, 35 to 40 gigawatts. Fine. Then we have FY25 and FY26. We may not completely hit 100, but it's not something which is not reachable. So let's assume that this year and next year we do about 10, 11 gigawatts, another 40 gigawatts. So 46 plus 50, we're close to that number.
Okay. Thank you. That's it from my side. Thank you a lot.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Abhishek Datta from Anand Rathi Shares and Stocks. Please go ahead, sir.
Hello, sir. So I just wanted to know, like, now that we are network positive, what are our plans to tender aggressively for the PSU project?
They already bid and continue to bid. We are bidding.
There's nothing
called an aggressive bid, because we never call any bid as an aggressive. As I mentioned in my opening comments, we are looking at getting the orders which have add value to our bottom line. So therefore, we will continue to do that. It is whether irrespective of public sector or here. Public sector earlier was not on our canvas because of our network issues. But now as we move ahead, yes, that is the area which we will participate. And in fact, we have also been getting requests from large public sector saying that, asking us to participate as well, because otherwise their growth is getting curtailed.
Okay.
I only correct the word of aggressive. But we started participating.
So, and secondly, sir, can you just elaborate on this co-development of project for the land to circumvent the land concern?
It's nothing but in a simplistic way, can the land development happen much earlier than actual project schedule? Okay. This was a model which Suzlon was known earlier years, where we used to have the land, we used to have connectivity when it was an STU model before FY17. And therefore, we used, in fact, those years, we used to get orders in the same year, complete the orders in the same year, deliver the orders in the same year. That situation changed now when it became into the central grid and CTU. And we are also not spending so much of money on the land. What we are now trying to do, even it's a concern not just for us, even a concern for the investors, because projects are getting delayed, land not being there, whether we do EPC or they do EPC themselves, taking the equipment from us. So therefore, there are a large number of the investors who our long-term plans are saying that can we work in a manner that we will decide the execution of orders much in advance. And order would be placed. But what, let us start with an NTP for the development first, so that we can acquire the land, keep that ready. Land in the sense when we talk about land, land with the pathways. Keep it ready and then project schedule will be much faster. Even it's good for them because their IDC gets saved and, you know, good for everybody, uncertainties will come down. That's a model which is win-win for us as well as win-win for them. We are facilitating that by actually having these exclusive rights in some other states.
And you mentioned about you have access in Rajasthan of 2.7 gigawatt and 83 gigawatt.
Yeah. Where we have an authorization from the government saying that in this geographical area, you have an exclusive rights to develop wind projects. Nobody else can develop.
And when you say land,
that is because they are not giving us anything. They are giving us because looking at the possibility that during we are setting up we have a manufacturing facilities in these states, and those are getting revived. So there is an employment there. In the project stage, there is an employment. And second thing is every single project we do the service business for 25 years of the project. So there is an employment potential when we work there. So therefore, that is what they're looking at, and they're trying to give us these exclusive rights. It's a win-win for both the state and us.
Correct. And when you say land, does it also come with pre-planned evacuation facility?
Yeah, we are actually looking, see, obviously when you ask for a rights for a geographical area, when we need to define which is that area. Obviously, we do that based on historical land wind data what we have. Otherwise, we can't go for any land what is government on the deal. And second is based on the plan of CTUs, which the grid substations what Power Grid has announced and are in the pipeline to announce. That is the basis. It's done based on that.
Okay. And sir, can you just elaborate once more on the the transmission access by the solar project, because they are commissioned faster. They have faster access to the grid, whereas for wind you need 1.5 years of data to get access. So what is government thinking about that?
So see, let's say substation is announced in a location A, solar doesn't need to think much. They can straight away ask for the connectivity, because solar can be set up in most parts of the country. No, it doesn't need to be site specific. Whereas for wind to set up in that area, you have to have a wind data, whether the site is suitable for wind or not. So by the time you have the data, that substation is full. So therefore, there is an issue becoming that, you know, by the time we say that this particular area has a good wind potential, whatever the CTUs are there in the nearby are getting filled up fast. So now the government has asked us to say, the players to say that where is the highest wind potential sites, we will plan the CTUs there, and they're also thinking of saying that, okay, in these areas we would basically try to restrict the connectivity for wind. That is in the work in progress with Government of India. And the second one, what I said is that wherever the solar is already connected today, commissioned today, the same areas they're going to open up under the same substation, because substation, the transmission capacity is already there. They are thinking of it's again a discussion between the parties and the MNRE, even in the latest meeting of Secretary. They are open to the idea of coming up with the bids connected to those substations. And if anybody wants to come and set up a wind capacity here, because you don't need to develop grid and you don't need to develop substation. How much of it is feasible? It may not be in every single solar place it will be feasible because wind is perfect, but this will unlock certain transmission capacity for wind.
Okay. And so, secondly, on the timelines, like we have two-third non-EPC projects and one-third is EPC. What kind of execution timelines you are looking for in both of them?
See, the, we don't prefer anything. It's basically, we look at what is on the table and what is could we take it. If there is more demand for EPC, we'll take more. In the case of EPC, the timelines are different because it also includes the land and BOP. In case of simple supply, we can do it in a shorter time period. Time periods will vary. But time periods will match with respect to the project execution schedule.
Okay.
In case of a non-EPC, that they will say that my project is going to get ready by this time. This is how I want the supplies. Then obviously we look at our manufacturing timelines, what we committed to various people. Then we say this is how we can supply. Then there's a matchmaking happens and we find there's a contract with respect to the schedule. In case of EPC, obviously because we know how this project is going to shape up in terms of the land and BOP, because which will control, we give them the schedule saying that this is how we can develop this project. And there's a discussions and happens. Obviously the EPC schedules are longer than the supply schedules.
For these EPC projects, you will also like to them to be in the states of where you have already got this
access. No, not necessary. Not necessary. Not necessary. Anywhere we do.
Okay, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to all the participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may please press star and one on your touchtone telephone. The next question is from the line of Rajesh, VC, an individual investor. Please go ahead, sir. Rajesh, sir, your line is in the talk mode. Please go ahead with your question.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so just, thank you for the opportunity. And also, I think the results for Q4 are quite good compared to the previous year. So congratulations to that. Yeah. So just a couple of questions. One is, how about the offshore wind project? So is it coming in and how we can show some perspective on that part compared to the, the regular wind projects that you all already get in? And that will be the first part. And the second question will be on the green hydrogen, mission. So how that is going on for the green hydrogen, how you see us on the future part, how it is getting implanted from your end. Yeah, thank you. These are the two questions.
Yeah. On offshore, the government of India is working towards developing offshore projects. But as I said earlier, that there are challenges with respect to the tariff for offshore in India because our generation difference between onshore to offshore is not significant. PLFs don't go up that high, but the cost goes up. So therefore, the cost of generation is very high. But still, to get into an offshore, the government of India announced that first 1,000 megawatts they will do with VGF between Tamil Nadu and Gujarat. And they are also now come up with a bid for the offshore, the seabed allocation, where bidders, whosoever wins, can go and do the exploration and see whether it's feasible, and then, go ahead with the project. But there, at this stage, wherever the seabed is there, the policy is that they don't give any PPAs. They will only give you the rights to develop the project, and thereafter, they will also provide the evacuation up to the, the underground. And thereafter, wherever you want to take the power through using the central grid and where you, whom you want to sell, at what price you want to sell, it's all to you. There are some risks. Offshore would happen at some point of time, but I don't think it's going to be a significant needle mover immediately, because any offshore project, even today, if you start, it won't be, not to keep for the next 5 to 6 years before you execute the project.
Okay.
That's on the offshore. First, I lost the second question. What was the question?
Green hydrogen.
Green hydrogen. Our expectation is that, as we said that today, the C&I segment is significantly increasing to change their captive requirement to green renewable energy. That would continue for next 2 to 3 years. Our expectation is that green hydrogen demand for renewable energy would pick up in the next 2 to 3 years, not immediate one. There are projects being announced, but really to take off on the ground with financial closure and everything, not in the next 2 to 3 years. So by the time the current C&I demand, which is the captive requirement for the existing industry, starts seeing downward trend, is where we expect that hydrogen would pick up. That's why our assumption is that C&I demand would continue to be there for next 5-6 years.
So just one added question on the same thing. So do you feel that you have enough capacity? Suppose the green hydrogen comes in or kicks in, you know, the project kicks in, because I think that is going to be a huge change around for that. Yeah, yeah. Please thoughts on, give some thoughts on that. Yeah, thank you.
Now, green hydrogen is, as far as we are concerned, we will only supply the green hydrogen project. We'll also have a renewable energy project. The green hydrogen is nothing but doing the producing the hydrogen using the renewable energy.
Yeah.
So wherever the green hydrogen is there, they would also ask for the certain portion of renewable energy to be built in order to meet that round-the-clock requirement.
Sure.
So we will actually supply the wind turbines, like whatever we are supplying today for the C&I customers for the captive consumption is what it will be for the green hydrogen. It's no different. And the volumes, whatever we come in, it will be actually foresee the volumes for the 2 to 3 years ahead would be significantly higher. We'll ramp up our manufacturing capacity if required to meet the demand.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, sir. Yeah. And all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We'll take the next question from the line of Subhadip Mitra from Nuvama. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the follow-up opportunity. My first question is with regard to the EPC opportunity that exists. So you did mention that hopefully by FY27 we may look at the overall TAM growing to about 9-10 gigawatts. Within that, how much do you foresee being the EPC part? What proportion of it?
First of all, when I said 9-10 gigawatt is a sector, it is not Suzlon. I hope I'm clear on that.
Of course, sir. That is the overall market size, correct?
Yeah. So obviously, the entire 9-10 gigawatt has to be EPC in the sense that it could be split EPC, it could be firm EPC. It all depends upon the investor's need, whether they want to give a turnkey EPC to somebody like us, or they will say that we will do our own development and then do the BOP ourselves, and or to give it to some third party. That portion will give only the supply and supervision. We don't know how the shape up will happen. I can only comment upon current order book, what we have. As I said, that 1/3 is EPC, 2/3 is non-EPC. But how it will shape up as moving ahead, but I said our aim and objective is to keep increasing EPC, because if we have a land, our EPC will improve. So through this developmental route, we are trying to increase the EPC portion of our order book, because then we have a control on the project.
Understood, sir. Understood that point. Just you know, if I may rephrase my question in a different way, what I was trying to get to is that my understanding is a large portion of the TAM today is either the C&I market or probably PSUs or other players who probably don't have their own EPC capabilities. So clearly that portion of the market will need a turnkey service provider like yourself. So I was just trying to get a guesstimate of to how large that of the
bike and even if you look at today, current year, when we have commissioned 3,200, 3.2 gigawatts, 3 to 5 to be precise, our market share is 27%. Okay, there are other people who are actually developed and commissioned those projects. So there are capabilities available today. May not be a turnkey OEM. Turnkey OEM doesn't exist today, other than us. But the people are trying to do is that, you know, break into different packages, give electrical to somebody, give land to somebody. But there are problems in integrating the project. Those issues are facing. That's one of the reasons why capacity addition is not happening to the extent it should happen. Based on that experience, how the market, it all depends upon how, what investor wants to do it. He feels that, you know, safest is to go and give a turnkey to Suzlon, because there are nobody who takes turnkey today other than us.
Correct. Correct. Understood. And then secondly, in terms of competition, do you see a lot of competitive intensity coming in from some of the larger MNC players, whether it's, you know, Vestas, Envision or otherwise, and can that become a threat for us later on in terms of them trying to eat into our market share?
I don't think so. When the pie is increasing to 9 to 10 gigawatts, obviously, I don't think we're even dreaming that we can deliver 9 to 10 gigawatts in FY27. So there is going to be significant capacity for everybody. And then the on the price point of it, I think we are definitely cheaper than the European suppliers. And whatever is there with NVIDIA and others talking, that even today they are there in the market aggressively, but you can see our market share in terms of orders. We have our own set of customers, especially in the C&A segment. So to simplistic way to answer, we don't see a competition pressure in the next 2 years.
Understood, sir. Thank you so much. That answers my question.
Thank you, sir. We take the next question from the line of Ravi Vadaga, an individual investor. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, just a follow-up on the competition intensity. What would be our market share on OMS side? I understand from the installation side, it's 27-28%. What would be on the OMS side? And the second question is, understand from news reports that Siemens Gamesa is on the block. Any color, I mean, you may not want to talk about the specific competitor, but just what would its impact be on for us to get new business in OMS side, which they were handling, or anything that you might want to comment?
If, as far as the market share of OMS is concerned, fundamentally every single machine we sell, we only sell with the condition that there has to be a service contract. Okay? So therefore, whatever we are delivering is what keeps on increasing our number. So therefore, whatever is our market share in terms of COD, let's say 27% is market share, that much is would keep increasing in our OMS business. And OMS business today, obviously, we have the largest market share, that is, because otherwise everybody has much lesser capacity, even 15 gigawatts of that means what we are operating. And as far as the Siemens Gamesa, I really don't want to comment, but on the multi-brand acquisition, not commenting any specific manufacturer, you know that we started getting into that area, but we're going in a very cautious manner. Today, we have about 220 megawatts we are operating today. Most part of it is we acquired during this year, but we want to take, look at them, stabilize, before we actually expand in a significant way, as far as the creeping acquisition is concerned. Let's see how things shape up as we see in the future. But multi-brand is definitely, yes, is one which is the way for us to increase our market share in OMS.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we take that as the last question for the day. I would now like to hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
Thank you, everyone, for participating in today's call. Of course, our dear readers' results and our presentation are available on our website, and our investor relations team is available for any further follow-up queries and interactions that you may have. Thank you for joining, and have a great weekend. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of ICICI Securities, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.